Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everybody. We are live. Welcome to the unofficial Apple Weblog Talkcast for July 22nd, 2012. 2012? When did that happen? Holy smokes. I'm your host, Michael Rose, for the unofficial Apple Weblog. Thrilled to be here tonight. Just checking our levels, making sure everything is as it should be. And I think mine are a little hot, so I'm going to just duck myself there. There we go, so I'm not blasting out your eardrums and blasting out the recording. Of course, Skype insists on sneaking up that audio. So if there's something in the newer version of Skype that I haven't downloaded yet that will prevent that from happening, I guess I'll just move further away from the microphone because I have no control over my actual levels. Speaking of things I have no control over, I would like to welcome my colleague from across the country in the great Pacific Northwest, the mistress of the House of Crackpot Theories, the lovely and talented Miss Kelly Guimont.
Good evening, everybody.
Thanks for being with us, Kelly.
Don't do the intro.
I try. And also our special guest tonight, first of all, his first time on the show, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
The tech columnist and tech beat reporter for the Pioneer Press of St. Paul, Minnesota, Julio Ojeda Zapata. Julio, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm so thrilled that you came and so thrilled that you volunteered your Sunday night. We were talking right before we started the show that you're actually skipping watching the live broadcast of Breaking Bad on AMC, which is just on some level heartwarming that you would miss a fantastic television program about drug dealers and methamphetamines to come on our little program. So we really appreciate it. Thank you for showing up.
Oh, no problem.
Also joining us tonight, not for the first time, but he's always welcome and brings a lot to the conversation, from iMore, the proprietor of what once was the iPhone blog, now is iMore.com, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Kelly. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Our pleasure, as always. And also joining us from the Atlantic Central, I guess, somewhere in the midsection of the country, the breadbasket of the country, not the breadbasket, more the coastal area-ish. I've completely screwed up this introduction, so I'm simply going to welcome him back to the Talkcast, one of our regulars from the Icon Factory, Mr. Gideon McHugh.
Greetings, programs.
Greetings, Ged. I choked that one. I will fix that in post, I promise. We will not suffer.
Like right above the pencils and below the Cupid dolls, right here in the general section where the gum is right there, in that little spot there.
It's the creative brief for one of the Ramp Champ levels that didn't get done. You know, it's like, it's sort of, you're throwing the ball, kind of tore, it's the operation level. We want to hit him right in the funny bone, but below the wishbone. Anyway.
I got to say hi to Julio and Renee, too, so hi, guys.
And I want to welcome all our listeners who are tuned in live and those who are listening on the podcast on the RSS feed after the fact. It's July 22nd, it's Sunday, and Apple's habit, as of the past couple times something like this has happened, has been for two company events to be in very close proximity. The first being the announcement of quarterly financial results, which is scheduled for Tuesday, the 24th, after the market closes. And then when the last time that happened, when Apple had an OS update coming out for OS 10, Lion was shipped via download the day after the financial announcements. So Steve Sandy is on the record as of probably a month ago as saying that was going to happen. Of course, he was a week off or more, about a week off on when the financial results were going to be announced. But
yeah,
let's go around the horn. Kelly, do you think we're going to see Mountain Lion on Wednesday?
So remembering that I run a home for this sort of thing, I'm going to say yes, but I'm going to qualify it with, I think we're going to get a silent update to something hardware-wise as well.
Hmm.
I think, like, if I ran the zoo, here's what I'd do. It'd be new minis.
Really?
Yeah, because it was the last time they were updated was last July. So it would be nice if those got a bump, because that would be a silent thing that they could do that would also be a secondary wave of attention. So, yeah, I think so.
A little hardware update. Okay. So, Ged, are you expecting to see the new big cat this week?
Now that you mention it, it seems to make sense. I mean, it's really stunned me how quickly it's all happened, but I wouldn't put it past them by any means at all. So I'm on board with that. I'm good with that.
Okay, fair enough. So, Renee, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be this week?
I want to first wonder if you just you know, broke NDA and announced that the official name is going to be the new big cat, like the new iPad. Is Apple breaking with pattern?
Well, you know, what's funny is that actually, if you look at Apple's, and this I was going to get to it later, but since you mentioned it, Apple is not including 10.8 anywhere in the branding for this OS. It is OS 10 Mountain Lion. Which is really interesting. And actually we've had I went back today to all our coverage from June and pulled out 10.8 because, like, you know what? They're not calling it that. The official name is OS 10 Mountain Lion. So that's kind of interesting. But anyway, no, I wasn't breaking NDA, not the new big cat. So what do you think in terms of timing?
Yeah, I think Apple likes its patterns. I think that, it happened last year. Why not this year? I mean, it's as good a day to pick as any. I'll join all the rest of you in that boat.
It's not that leaky. Julio, finally to you, what's your expectation for when we're going to see it?
Well, that's a good question. I went back to the Apple website just to double check. They do say July very clearly, and the calendar is ticking down here. And the last developer preview version was pretty fully baked. There didn't seem to be any major problems with it. So, you know, when you connect all the dots, I'm confident that we're going to hear about it this week.
Excellent. So that, of course, brings up the question of what people are excited about and interested in for the release. We've had Steve and Erica digging in and covering it, and they've done a great job. And we're going to have, actually, this is the first time, I believe, we're going to have a day of full review of the OS. We have a mm-hmm. mystery writer. We have our mystery correspondent working on it right now. It won't be John Syracuse length. We can't promise that. Nobody's as long as John. But it will be
speaking of book lengths. Speaking of book lengths, Mountain Lion works. Let's also plug that if it's something that you are interested in, Steve and Erica, who are very good at this sort of thing, also wrote an e-book called Getting Ready for Mountain Lion that you can check out. That is awesome. And it's a really handy guide if you are new to upgrades. It's also a really handy guide if you're trying to help someone else and you just want to make sure you've got all your steps covered. Their books are a really good way to do that. So there's a shameless plug for them.
That was a shameless plug. But looking at the OS directly and looking at, first of all, the question is, who should update? And who should update? Is there anyone who should really truly be updating the first day when it comes out? Is there any? I mean, I'll reserve my opinion on this. But is there any reason you guys can think of that somebody should say, you know what, the minute it's available, I'm going to press that button and download it?
Developers.
As a tech writer, you know, as somebody who advises my readers here in the Twin Cities, I'm very conservative. I always tell people when that new hardware product comes out, you know, wait to see if there are any bugs. If a new software product comes out, you know, give it a while to see if anybody's got any major problems. You know, for average consumers, I would, you know, definitely say give it at least a week or two. I of course will install it a nanosecond if it becomes available.
that instant press. Well, Ged, actually, what's your take? I mean, for someone who you know, your Mac is your livelihood. What's your time frame once it comes out? How long do you usually wait before moving a production machine onto a new OS?
A bit. I mean, I didn't actually start using Lion until, I don't know, like 4 months after it came out, something like that. that was just because I don't like to run different OSs at work and at home. I like to be on the same OS. So if we're not all on it at work, I don't usually upgrade at home. I wait and do it all at the same time. So, but I think we'll be moving to Mountain Lion quicker than we did to Lion. It seems to be more stable, and it doesn't have as many bugs out of the launch gate as Lion did. So
yeah.
I'm looking
forward
to it. I don't think it's too long.
That's actually one of you know, talking about that split OS versions between home and work. That was one of the biggest problems with the Lion rollout, was when people who had Lion on one machine and were using Snow Leopard or Leopard on another and had to flip their brains between the two scrolling directions.
That was a pain in the butt.
It was a pain, and I don't think we have anything really on the Mountain Lion feature list that's gonna hit us. I want to get to Renee, but first we do have a caller, Cool Guy. Cool Guy said he would like to call in, and he said he just bought a MacBook Pro 2012 13-inch, first MacBook ever. Cool Guy, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on? Well, originally what happened was this was basically an early birthday present before the 16th, and it's my first ever MacBook Pro. I just moved away from a Dell laptop, and it was 7-plus years with Dell. It was hectic. I said, you know, it's time to take an alternative route and all that stuff. So, yeah, I figured, heck, I'm going the Mac route. And to be honest, I've been using Mac for a long, long time, but on unofficial hardware, you might say. So I said, it's time to take the leap. I'm going official. I'm like, I'm done. I'm not going to mess with this crap anymore. And I said, so I don't want to keep using unofficial crazy stuff. So I said, I'm tired of the Hackintosh route. I'm going the official way. And I'm really excited for Mountain Lion, but there's a few concerns that I have. First off,
share them.
Well, I'm a developer, first off, for iOS and OS X, and I'm fairly new to it and all that. So first I'm going to download the betas to even see if I like it. And to be quite honest, Mountain Lion for me is just so vague and it's new. I mean, compared to Leopard and Snow Leopard, that is, because I did use them for quite a while. And it's just so new. It's like, I don't get this at all, you know? I mean, it's like taking apart a car and putting in a bunch of vague parts.
It's an interesting perspective. How long were you have you been using Mac OS or OS X in your Hackintosh environment? How long were you using Leopard and Snow Leopard?
Basically, I started out on this Dell 1501 laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, basically, I started back in the Leopard days, you might say.
Yeah. So you've had enough time to really get used to Mac OS X. Well, let me pass that around, and we'll come back to you in a minute. But let me ask Renee, do you hear from people that they miss Snow Leopard, that they've been on Lion for a while, and they feel like and Lion is not doing it for them? Is there a sense out there that OS update was not fully baked?
You mean aside from the bloggers in both of our timelines?
Well, yes.
because there really is a big difference. I see geeks all the time on Twitter and places like that complaining that Lion wasn't the update they were hoping for. But my mom with Lion, it's a much more relatable experience to her. And I think Mountain Lion will be even more so. She'll have the same apps that she sees on her iPad. She'll see reminders. It won't be the same operating system when you get down to the nuts and bolts, but it'll be presented in a very similar way. And I'm actually wondering now, because you know, when we look at our web stats, we see people update to the new version of iOS almost immediately. It's almost a non-brainer. And now that Apple's moving to yearly updates with OS X and making them much more appliance-looking, I wonder if we'll start seeing much faster than normal computer adoption amongst mainstream audiences as well.
Yep. And I think you've hit on the essential point there, that Lion was really the first OS X update that was intended for the halo effect, for the in-migration to the Mac from iOS users.
Yeah.
And the features that were added were not meant for they weren't meant for geeks. They were meant for normals. They were meant for people who were They were meant for mom. Yeah, they weren't even people who were new to the Mac. They were meant for people who were new to computers, to personal computers. And so, you know, cool guy, to your point that it felt a little weird and a little vague. Yeah, because it was not. It's not the metaphors that were targeted at you. And if you have a Hackintosh, if you're a developer on a Hackintosh, you're at least three standard deviations away from the target market for Lion. You're not what they're looking for.
Well, you know, I still am actually using my MacBook Pro more than I am my desktop, actually.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, Lion and Mount Lion on it, fine, I'll tell you that right now. But I'm really sick of living in that environment where it's like I have to rely on compatibility and all this craziness. So I'm like, I'd rather use my Mac Mini or my MacBook Pro for Mac. It's like I would just rather run some other operating system than OS X on an unofficial machine.
As well you should. And if you see Linux Scouser in the chat, who is otherwise known as Mr. Mike, he's the husband of one of our editors, Megan. He will gladly recommend an Ubuntu build for those machines. But my point wasn't necessarily the utility of running it on the Hackintosh, but simply that conceptually and cognitively, you're not the guy that Apple is trying to target with the new features in Mac in OS X. They're trying to target a different kind of consumer. And actually, I want to go to Julio for a second here because you have a different perspective on the wider tech audience through your column and through the wide range of stuff you cover. What's the consumer perception of OS X? I mean, how much does it resonate in the market when you have something like Mountain Lion coming out? Are people talking about it? Are they excited? Does it even rise to a fraction of the level of you know, when's the next iPhone coming out? When's the iPhone 5 coming out? The kind of questions that we get every day. Does it have any resonance, or is it really just internal to the Mac community?
My job as a tech writer for a newspaper is very interesting because I deal with an incredible variety of people, ranging from elderly readers of the physical newspaper who don't have the faintest idea what operating system is running on their computer, nor do they care, all the way over to Mac enthusiasts who absolutely are going to upgrade to Mountain Lion the nanosecond comes out. So I see the range. And to your earlier question, I have not, among the Mac enthusiast types, I have not heard a lot of complaining about Lion, which to me reflects the trend of Mac users being very aggressive of updating to the latest versions of the operating system compared to Windows users. So what I hear from people sort of reflects that. But then there are people who they don't care. They don't care what operating system is running on their computer. They don't care what operating system came out to hypothetically replace the one on their computer. My mother's a good example. Her ancient iMac croaked while I was visiting her, so we had the I had fun shopping for a new Mac for with her. She bought an iMac and which had obviously Lion on it. She doesn't know what Lion is. She doesn't have the faintest idea. But she's delighted. When she loves the hardware. She loves the software. She loves all the new features. She's just having a ball. And so with my mother, I will be very conservative about whether I try to push her to Mount Lion, because I don't really see the point. Because where she is right now, she's in this very happy place that I'm very hesitant to mess with.
Yeah.
Well, I'll update a Mountain Lion, but I probably, at least for now, will not suggest that my mother do the same.
And that's a really good, I mean, back, sort of circling around back to Ged's point, if you don't need to, don't. Unless there's a reason that you're hungering for it, or a specific feature you need, give it a few days. Or in the case of a mom or production machine, a few weeks or months. Cool guy, we'll come back to you a little bit later on, but thanks for your input and your perspective. I think it is a interesting perspective too, when you've been on OS X for much longer than you've been on the Mac. Not a voice necessarily we hear that often from the Mac community. So thank you for sharing your thoughts.
And I do mention one thing. I've been in computers for like nearly 16 years, as this is like my 15th, 16th year with computers in general. And I got to tell you, things really have changed. And I think it's for the better in this perspective as far as the Mac. But, I mean, I think it is going to take some time to get used to this. But thanks for all your guys' input. And I'll definitely stick around. And if you need me to voice in on anything, you know, just tell me and I'm here.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Got it.
And of course, that applies to all our callers. If you have a comment, suggestion, or question, just hit that star 8 button or that request to talk button in the TalkShoe client, and we will gladly hear from you. Now that we've established sort of the baseline in terms of when should people upgrade, which is they should wait. there's actually, again, I'll recommend Stephen Erica's series of posts. You can find it linked in the notes for tonight's show, and we'll be referencing it again on the site over the next few days. But let's talk about some of the things that we are excited about announced features in Mountain Lion. I'll start us off. AirPlay mirroring, for my money, is worth the price of admission, and I mean that quite literally because I have paid for an application that lets me do that, and mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. I actually wish that the reverse mirroring was available and that you could that it included the capabilities of the reflection app to allow you to mirror your iOS device to your Mac screen. I understand why Apple's not doing that from a rights management perspective, but that's the feature I wish was there. But AirPlay mirroring as a Mac output technology is mm-hmm. A no-brainer and B awesome. So I'm really looking forward to playing with that.
Yeah, unless you're Kelly.
Well, okay, Kelly, what are you – well, right, your machine can't support it.
Because my machine can't take it, which is the biggest thing that I was the most excited about getting. And then they put out their iOS-ified restrictions, and here's – you know, we say this will meet the system requirements, so you can be running Mountain Lion if you want to. But the things that are the biggest deal about Mountain Lion that you're going to actually get, that you're going to be excited about – you can't have those. So,
yeah. Bad trombone.
Yeah. So I'm super bummed because I can't – what I really wanted was AirPlay. I work from home now, and so I really like the option to be able to push things from my phone phone or my iPad to the TV through the Apple TV. That's awesome. And I really want my computer to have that same capability. So I was just sort of going, you know, I know it's coming. And they said that AirPlay was coming for your computer with Mountain Lion. So as soon as that's shipped, it'll be awesome. And it's $20. So that'll be great. And it turns out I meet the requirements. So yay. And no. Here's the thing is that I'm at the point. So I have a unibody MacBook. My mutant MacBook, I call it, because after this model, everything that's 13-inch and aluminum is a MacBook Pro. But mine is just called a plain old MacBook. It's a thing, regardless of what the Genius Bar tries to tell me every time I take it in. It's a unibody MacBook. And I'm at the point, it's the late 08 model is what it's called. I got it at the very end of 2008. So it's pushing 4 years old, and I'm kind of at a place where I could pull the trigger on something new if I wanted to or not. And so I thought, you know, what I'll do is I'll drop a couple $100 on SSD, which will get me a little more oomph, and then when there is a 13-inch Retina option for me, I can just do that. So because my issue primarily was portability. Like, I like to take my computer places, and so having a 15-inch screen does not appeal to me anymore. I did it for a long time, and then I got this machine, and now I wonder how I ever huffed that 15-inch machine around anywhere in the first place.
Well,
I'm conflicted.
Don't get me started on Retina. We'll talk Retina towards the end of the show because I'm in day 3 of my Retina experience, and I have some pointed observations. But let's get to Renee. What are you looking forward to in Mountain Lion, if anything? That looks awesome.
Well, since you already stole AirPlay mirroring, I'm gonna.
You could say it again because it's awesome.
It totally is. It's I mean, we all used to use other applications like Air Video or something to duplicate that, have to use an iOS device in between or buy software. But I also think the Game Center games between iOS and macOS, if you have both systems, is fantastic. I mean, I grew up in the time when you had the Xbox and Windows, and you never knew why nothing could work together, and you couldn't play games across these things. And now finally,
you
get to see this big go up on stage and try and take out Apple, Craig Ferroli, right on WWDC, and I just want to do that.
You want to take out Craig? Really?
Well, if I was, I just like the idea of Craig versus the Skig. I think that is just the image that sets the line for me.
What was his Game Center handle that got such a? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say though. I mean, I would agree with that, except that it would be even better if Game Center games could share their achievements and leaderboards across all platforms, and they can't.
Yeah.
You know, a Mac title has its own Game Center entry, and an iOS title has its own Game Center entry. And if there was a way that those could be shared, you know, like universal apps can share their achievements, that would be great. But they can't. So
I will add, though, that
kind of
Astronaut for iPad looks fantastic over airplane mirroring, FYI.
That's why I say it. You know, I mean, I wish that we could combine the achievements for the two, you know, because they're separate apps and it's not a universal app. You know, you have to get the achievements twice. If we were to make Astronaut for Mac, that would mean you have to get them three times. You know, and that could definitely be better. That's all
I'm hoping they fix that, like in the new Mountain Lion and the new iOS 6. I think that would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed that we're getting some interesting tips from Guest 12, which are a little bit long for the chat, which are good stuff. So I'm sorry if I was distracted by that. Also, Craig Federighi's handle in Game Center in the WWDC keynote was Hair Force One. That was what I was trying to remember. So the lack of or the sort of incomplete integration for Game Center, obviously an issue, and like you said, Renee, hopefully something that will get adapted or fixed going forward. Julio, are you seeing anything in Mountain Lion that's saying to you, got to have it, feature-wise?
Well, there are a little bits and pieces that are exciting to me. A couple of features that are coming down the pike, which seem relatively minor, but they make me very happy, and they just kind of make me giggle. One is having the Unibar in Safari. Ever since Chrome, you know, went to the single entry window, I've sort of craved that in other browsers. I discovered that you can actually, on Firefox, you can actually remove the search window and then just leave the address bar, and that
the awesome bar,
the search window.
Yeah, they call it the awesome bar, and they've
So it's great. But I discovered that with Safari, if you try to remove the search window, you're also removing the URL window. So you can't do that trick. So the fact that Mountain Lion will have to set the unified entry field is exciting for me. Just aesthetically, it just makes me happy because it's so tidy and clean looking. The other thing that has bugged me about OS X is the scrolling bar, you know, in apps and windows sometimes tends to be a little difficult to use. I'm a mouse guy. I'm not big on the gestures, the touch gestures. So I have found OS X to be a little mouse unfriendly, and Apple is addressing that with a new feature where if you hover your cursor over the scroll bar, it automatically widens and becomes easier to use. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah,
and I'm a big social media guy. I'm a Twitter-aholic and so forth. And so being able to tweet and update to Facebook within the operating system is very exciting for me, particularly because I use Bitly. I was using Bitly, the bookmark, but Bitly to you know, tweet things out, and Bitly turned around and completely destroyed their product. It's borderline unusable. Other bookmark lists that I've tried to use aren't very good either. So having that capability built into the operating system just makes me giddy. I just absolutely love that. So I'm looking forward to that.
not everybody gets made giddy by the feature, so it's important to acknowledge it when it does come up, how awesome they are. Ged, I know we heard from you about what you're not happy with in terms of Game Center integration. What are you excited about?
A lot of stuff. I'm really looking forward to having reminders on the desktop.
Oh, yeah.
So that I can really, make use of it. I have used so many sticky and to-do apps on the Mac desktop over the years that I'm really looking forward to just merging them all and combining them and using reminders and notes, and having them be all iCloudy and sync everywhere and everything. That part is going to be great. I was just going to say also Notification Center, because I really want to free myself from Growl. So I'm looking forward to that.
I really like Growl.
That should be a bumper sticker. Free yourself from Growl.
It's like the one-act show, it's the same, and it's always there, and it's always been that way, and I just want to try something new.
It
seems pretty darn cool. So.
It is interesting to me how much sort of low-level Sherlocking is going on in this release. Usually you can point to one big one, and this is just, it's pretty chock full of them. You've got, I guess the primary one would be dictation, which is not really Sherlocking. It's not like Dragon hasn't been around for ages, but if dictation on the Mac works well, and predictably and reliably, it will be. It may do some harm to Nuance's sales. Of course, Nuance's.
It is Nuance, right?
What?
It is licensed from Nuance, and they're probably getting more.
Yeah.
Maybe they're getting more than they would otherwise.
It's almost certain that a chunk of that technology is licensed from Nuance. It's not 100% certain.
I'm pretty sure that if that is what's happening, and they think that they're losing revenue, they can always just wipe their tears with the Siri money.
Yeah, it makes an excellent Kleenex. There's as you mentioned, Reminders is going to put a hurt on a bunch of third-party to-do apps. Notification Center is tackling Growl. Preview is getting awfully close to Sherlocking Acrobat or Acrobat Reader at least.
Hoping.
We can always hope. And then you have Finder encryption for folders. We have QuickTime 10 is gaining hardware accelerated H.264 encoding, which is possibly, at least for people with modern machines, maybe Sherlocking some hardware. The Turbo 264 from Elgato, which is kind of interesting. Not sure that's happened before. But the one
Not that I can think of.
I have to say the one feature that I am really, really excited about, and I only just noticed it today, is the ability to stop loud microphone noises. No, it's not. It is the return. It's the return of Save As.
Save As.
Save As is coming
back.
Okay,
so I did not upgrade to Lion until recently, March, February, March, right in there. And not having Save As has been driving me to drink since. Okay, driving me to drink more since.
More.
Yeah, well, we've talked about high school being why I drink the rest of the time, but this has made me drink more because I like Save As, and I don't like Revert and all of that stuff. And I said it in the chat earlier, maybe that should be my first tattoo, Apple Shift S, because I use it all the live long day. I really do.
And as so say we all, except for NorCal Explorer, who does not say so in the chat. I miss Save As desperately. And actually, what's interesting about that is how iCloud the iCloudification documents in the cloud is going to enable a whole different storage metaphor for Mac users. There's an Apple Insider piece today about how what a great thing it is that the abstraction of the file system is going away, or the thing that people find the most confusing is going away. I'm not 100% sold on the idea, largely because I sometimes open the same document in two different apps. I don't want to have to manage separate versions of that document just
mm-hmm.
because I'm opening it in two different apps. But again, that makes me not normal. And every time one of these new features conflicts with the way I want to do it, I find that opportunity to stop and think, okay, well, wait a minute. What if I were my mother, or what if I were my
mm-hmm.
my dad, or if I were a novice computer user, would this make more sense to me? And the answer almost always is yes. It's frustrating, but it's almost always yes.
Yeah. I find that constantly. We've had that talk. I'm convinced on my tombstone it will say, "Here lies Kelly, the exception to the rule." But I am convinced that you and I, Mike, are not the only people who think that Save As is a beautiful thing. And that's the thing that kind of bothers me. Like, for example, the example that I use for this, because it's my most common use of Save As, is my resume. When I was still leading the charge on the Hire Kelly movement, I would send my resume out with a custom cover letter to a bunch of different places. So the bulk of my cover letter stayed the same, but there were things that I would tailor specifically to each different place I was applying, the name of the person, or if there was a specific job title, like Dear Hiring Manager, whatever, and then specific things that I would put in that were tailored to the job. Now, I wanted to have my same basic resume and cover letter always be standard, and then be able to go in and tailor the things as I needed, and then I wanted a record of that. So I can type through it and then hit Save As and save it as the company and the date, resume, you know, whatever. And then I would always have that version as an archive. I don't want to have to go back to one file and umpteen versions of it to try and find the thing that I just saved. And I find that endlessly frustrating. And that was the thing that was making me crazed and drink more by leaving Save As, was because this is a very reasonable use case. I have this template that I use, that I spin off alternate versions from, and I don't ever have to do anything more with that version. I sent it. I just want to make sure I have a record of what they got. So I found it endlessly frustrating that there was no Save As. I'm really excited that it's coming back.
I have another one. Well, I have another one.
Yes.
Oh, good. Go for it.
I want to pose a question to the group because I don't know the answer. Can we still use iChat in Mountain Lion instead of messages? Because I'm really afraid of it.
Word on the tweet is that the giant change in messages between the beta and what ships in Mountain Lion is that it works.
Yeah. functionality is the new feature. No, I do not. Well, I don't know for sure, but I don't believe that you have the option of iChat in Mountain Lion unless you pull it forward from Lion. I could be wrong, and I'm not sure what the behavior is going to be in the release version. But they.
And I hate messages with the passion of a burning sun.
you hate. Well, one of the things that actually I think is not resolved yet is the Beepocalypse and the iMessagepocalypse, where you get notified on all your devices at the
yeah.
same time. The dark side of the cloud, the opposite of the silver lining, is that when everything's in the cloud, nothing knows that you've already taken care of it. Like you've already dismissed it. We're seeing in the chat that you can set messages with a legacy account, with an AIM account, AOL account, and certainly you don't have to turn on the iMessage feature that you don't have to use that account. Like are you concerned that the application is going to be different?
Well, it's just like this whole. It was what you're saying basically. It's like I'm getting the same message 14 times, you know, on all my different devices. I can't stand that. Also, too, sending files with iMessage is just forget it. You know,
yeah.
I have not had any luck. Has anyone had any luck sending files with messages? Because I haven't.
I've sent a file.
No. On my phone, I can send a picture to somebody using messages, but I have not had any success on anything else. And I was not a big iChat user in the first place because it drove me up a wall. So.
I mean, I'm sitting at work, and, like, someone will say, here's that file you asked for, and it's not coming through. And I'm like, are you on iMessage? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, get off it. Get on iChat.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Ben Rizig points out in the chat room that Jeff Gamet refers to it as the Apple Casino, which is totally true. When all of your when all of your devices go off at the same time because somebody sent you a message. So
the jackpot.
Yeah. So I've actually taken to sending him like 777. You know, you win as a text message just so that all his stuff goes off. So yeah, it's. I find it really frustrating. And the other thing that I found frustrating when I was trying to use messages on my computer is that messages on my computer – see, I'm having the opposite problem of Jeff, generally, in that a message I get on my phone doesn't show up on my computer, and a message on my computer won't show up on my iPad, but it might show up on my phone. And if I send a message with my iPad and someone replies, it might show up on my Mac. The reply might, but not the previous message. And it's all very confusing. I find it really hard to track.
It is.
And so,
Am I not the only one that's frustrated by this? Because it's really bad.
Well,
I
have not enjoyed iChat.
Random messaging.
Yeah, I've not enjoyed any. I have not enjoyed any solution from Apple for instant messaging, like, ever. I started with Fire in the public beta, and then as soon as Adium was available, somebody said, hey, you should try Adium because it's open source and they have all these skins so you can make your message list smaller. And so I went to Adium, and I've been using Adium for probably, like, however long it's been out. It's probably been, like, 10 years.
Except when you have to send a file again, and you can't send files with Adium.
You can't send files. You're back to Dropbox or other solutions. I think, Renee, you were going to chime in on this topic.
I was just being sarcastic. I was saying it's a brand on messaging. Because, you know, that's the thing now. I think Apple is – the joke was that Apple never made a good iChat, and it's just been cascading along over the years. The iMessages is interesting, but I think when they originally made phone numbers connect to iMessage, and then they added the iPod Touch and used email addresses, and at WWDC, they announced they're finally unifying those. But I know half of mine go to my phone and half of them go to my email address. And they have different functionality depending on which one you're sending them between. And people have different FaceTime accounts associated with different addresses. So sometimes you can or can't. And it's a giant mess. So I hope this grand unification of Apple IDs goes at least part of the way towards fixing that.
Well, and for a product that is on some level going to hit the carriers where they live, which is in SMS account fees. And actually, interestingly enough, with AT&T and Verizon bundling that $10 for unlimited SMS into their shared family plans now, they've basically acknowledged we're going to have a harder time selling text messaging as a standalone offering going forward. So we're simply going to make it part of the resort fee. It's like, hey, you paid $10, you get unlimited text messaging, and you can't not get it.
I don't know if you remember, Mike, but there was this document from Nokia a couple of years ago where they described how they set up text messaging to be the most profitable legal business ever devised by man. And they built the network, and they made phones that were messenger-centric, and they did everything they could to force people to use this exorbitantly expensive thing. So, I mean, anything that destroys that, good on us.
Yeah.
well done for us. Yeah.
My approach to certain areas where I think Apple has been borderline incompetent is just to completely circumvent it. Apple and go Google. Like, for instance, with texting, I use Google Voice.
Yep.
For productivity, like writing and so forth, I use a Google Docs. The whole save as conversation made me chuckle because that is what sort of kept me loyal to the Googleverse, because I just Google does the cloud much better than Apple. I'm going to be very interested to see what happens with iCloud going forward. And by the way, I have a sneaky suspicion Apple this week may announce iWork updates because it would
yep.
dovetail perfectly with the iCloud features built into Mountain Lion. So that's a distinct possibility, but I have to predict a high degree of probability that that whatever Apple reveals when it reveals it will not cause me to switch back over to the Apple way because Google just does this stuff much more confidently.
Well, and also now that Google Drive is sort of stepping into the fray a little bit in the doing really a hybrid of the things that Dropbox does well, which is store your stuff someplace you can get it and have it be on all your computers and your devices, and the stuff that Documents in the Cloud and iCloud is going to do, which is provide you with a way to easily and in a facile way edit that content. Google Docs plus Google Drive is a really interesting solution for that, and sort of makes you think, well, how much computer do I need? Could I get away with a Chromebox? What could I, plus my iPad? I mean, could I really live that way? And
that's a very, very good point. I'm playing with the latest Chromebook, the recently released upgraded, faster Chromebooks. They're very, very interesting machines. I'm not sure I would want to switch completely over to them being such a Mac guy, but I'm also such a Google head that when I crack open one of these babies, I feel 100% comfortable. I mean, because all the tools that I use on my Mac are right there. Mm-hmm. So I can very easily move from Mac the Chromebook with very, very little pain. There's certain things you can't do in a Chromebook. I mean, it's very difficult to edit video, very difficult new iTunes-type stuff. Certain things that the Mac, on the Mac that you can't do in a Chromebook. But I would estimate about 75% of the time, my experience on either machine is virtually identical.
And that's really interesting. And back to your point for just a second. Well, it combined with your point actually about the iWork apps, I mean there's a great productivity work you could do on a Chromebook and with the Google application suite, but you couldn't make a keynote level presentation. You could do an okay presentation, but you couldn't really do keynote. You could get pretty far with SlideRocket, you get pretty far with Google presentations, but to look at keynote and pages and numbers and think, wow, these applications still collectively bear the moniker iWork 09. They are three years old at this point. The fact that they're still, holding their own is really quite impressive. And Keynote last updated, this per the Mac App Store, last updated December 1st, 2011, going on 8 months between even minor updates. That was to enable iWork. At that time, iWork.com, I believe, the beta, which is going has gone away. The time has come. I mean, we need to get these apps revved up to iWork 12. We need to get them, get some new features in there and get some pizzazz. But we also need to work with Documents in the Cloud. So we need to be able to see that they're going to behave and be good citizens with the latest Apple stuff. They need to be retinized, which points me to my rant of the evening. but before we get off Mountain, or any other pressing questions about or comments about Mountain Lion, because I know it's going to be a busy week. I want to make sure everybody's gotten their opinions. Any last weigh-ins on that? Going once.
Generally speaking, it's a solid update. I'm very excited about it because it's not revolutionary. It doesn't sort of change the Mac experience in fundamental ways, but when you add up all the new features sort of collectively, it's a big leap forward. I'm really looking forward to it.
And in much the same way that Snow Leopard was the leopard that we were hoping for that was sort of fully baked. I think a lot of people are looking at this and saying, okay, well, this is now going to be Lion the way Lion was supposed to be, but maybe couldn't because, iOS wasn't where it had to be. The metaphors weren't done yet. Everything wasn't quite finished. So, you know, back
there was a big jaw-dropping moment for me when Lion came out, and it suddenly dawned on me that something that Apple had been hinting at, which was iCloud compatibility with the network productivity apps, wasn't there. You know, it seemed to all of us Mac geeks that Apple had said, you know, this is coming, and then when Lion came out, suddenly it wasn't there. It was like a shocking, kind of a shocking moment. And so now Apple is sort of batting all the I's and crossing all the T's and adding those things that it sort of implied Lion would have, but that turned out not to be the case. So now this is sort of the finishing touch where, you know, all the little missing gaps are filled in.
Yep. You get the feeling that they're going to switch to a TikTok update with OS 10 as well, because going to a yearly schedule, there's no way you can have as big an update every year as you used to have every 18 months, every two and a half years. So I'm betting we'll see smaller, more incremental OS 10 updates now as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems likely. And also we're dealing with a certain degree of maturity on the platform that we weren't dealing with. Keeping in mind that OS 10 on Intel is not that old. It only goes back to 10.4.4. We had an architecture switch in the middle of the development arc for this operating system. So we sort of froze it and had to catch up a little bit. And now since, you know, Snow Leopard was the first pure Intel, Lion is the first pure 64-bit kernel, and now Mountain Lion is dropped the Rosetta compatibility layer with PowerPC, and now we're sort of tracking a little bit better in terms of where the OS is going. I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about just briefly handicap the earnings call, which is coming up this week. We have, as always, Philip Elmer DeWitt doing a great job over at Fortune, or CNN Money, which is at tech.fortune.cnn.com. Why CNN Money is at tech.fortune.cnn.com is not a question I can answer. However, that is where you will find the Apple 2.0 blog, one of the best places to go for fiscal commentary about the company. And he has surveyed all the independent and professional analysts. We're looking at a consensus prediction for Q3 of about 30, you know, looking like about $38, maybe $39 a share. He said on average, that's completely wrong. What he said was the professional analysts are looking for earnings per share of about $10.31 on sales of $37 billion. Independents expecting $12.31 per share on sales of $41.5 billion, which is a pretty big gap. And he's looking at the consensus of $41.3 billion in revenue, earnings per share of $12.40, and gross margins of 45%, which seems actually rather high. But any way you slice it, there appears to be very little slowdown. And again, this will be Apple's best non-holiday quarter ever again, because that's how they roll. I mean, have we seen any hint of a speed bump, any hint of any sand in the gears with Tim Cook taking over from interim CEO to full-time CEO for the company over the past 6 months to a year?
I don't see anything wrong with Tim Cook, though. The two obvious speed bumps, and again, this is not my area of expertise, but the two speed bumps that are obvious to me were sort of in the iPhone sales lull, you know, with the new version coming out shortly, and also the delay in getting the iPad sold in China. If it happened earlier, it would have been a bonanza for Apple. It's just happening now, much later than I assume Apple would have hoped. So putting those two factors together, that is kind of a two big minuses on the balance sheet. How that will affect what is announced tomorrow, I have no idea, but those are the two things that come to mind.
Those are good ones. Anybody else on the earnings? Any comments and questions?
Apple will make all the money.
All the money.
All the money. That, like, there comes a point where when they start rattling off numbers, Tim just starts to sound like a grown-up on a peanut special. Because, like, I just cannot fathom that many billions of dollars at a time. So, and I don't mean this in, like, a math is hard kind of a way. I mean this in, like, an actual setting. Like, I cannot conceive of $40 billion. That's just a ridiculous amount of money. So, to me... Well, what I'm most interested in on the earnings call always is the much smaller numbers that are things like the year over year, and then when they offer context on the numbers, like the PC market overall has grown 2% and we've grown 18%. You know, that kind of thing. That was an actual number from one of the earnings calls last year, I think. So those are the kind of things that I'm interested in, is not how is Apple doing on its own, but how is Apple doing, you know, relatively, because those are always the numbers that are interesting to me, regardless of whether it means that Apple is kicking all the butt or getting their butt kicked, which is, you know, something Mike and I can probably talk about very fondly on some show sometime in the future. But those are the numbers that I'm the most interested in, is those kinds of things. And then finding out how they're doing in the rest of the world. Those are the parts that I'm the most curious about.
Well, and that we will undoubtedly hear about on Tuesday. So please do join us for that, for the earnings call. We will be live blogging it with our crack team of typists who will be eagerly covering it as we go, and being able to write things like effective tax rate and currency fluctuations without misspelling them. Very important. So
it is important.
It's very important. The thing I wanted to rant about briefly, very briefly, I will admit freely, this is a zeroth world problem. It does not even rise to the level of a first world problem. I have a new Retina MacBook Pro that I am evaluating at the moment. And it's great. It's fast. It's snappy. The screen is amazing. And every time I find myself looking at a non-Retina-enabled application, I think I've gotten cataracts. It is actually... It becomes, after a while, physically painful, because the application probably that I spend the most net time looking at, one of the applications certainly up there in the top three or four, Twitter for Mac, is not Retina. It's almost anti-Retina. That's how fuzzy it is. There are even some spots in Apple's applications. iCal, if you pull down the drop-down list of displayed calendars, that list is not Retina. The rest of the application is nice and sharp, but that list is not. And
the pixels
are huge. And it's these moments where the abstraction breaks down, and the computer essentially forces you to realize you're looking at a screen, that you're not interacting with your stuff. You're actually looking at a picture of these things, and the picture is differently. I mean, if you were looking at reality and part of it was blurry and part of it was not, you would assume you had something on your glasses. If you're looking at your, I mean, the number of times I've reached out to wipe it, thinking that it's blur, that something is on it. No, it's just that app. A minor rant, but a reason I think perhaps to suggest to someone who is a sort of person who is bothered by this sort of thing, but otherwise loves to get the latest and coolest technology. If they love to get the latest and coolest technology, but they can't stand to like be distracted, recommend to them not to get a Retina MacBook Pro. Not yet. It will make them crazy. That's all.
Have you tried Tweetbot?
Have I tried what? Sorry?
Tweetbot?
Alpha Tweetbot. I love using it, and it's nice and shiny until it stops loading tweets, and then I have to put it and reload it.
For Ged's benefit, I will note that Twitterific was Retina really early on the Mac, and looks fantastic.
I will gladly reload Twitterific. I was going to go to the. Yeah. I was just going to start a fluid single site browser of the Twitter mobile website and use that instead. But
the Twitter app that looks very recognized, it doesn't look very Mac native, but it does look very recognized, is the TweetDeck. I know a lot of Mac stalwarts don't like the non-Mac-y interface. But TweetDeck has worked very well for me on the Retina. But that leads me to a minor rant of my own. TweetDeck was recently updated. It has some nice new features. It was updated on the web. It was updated on Windows PC. It was updated in Chrome OS. It has not been updated on the Mac. And my suspicion is it's a holdup that being going through the approval process in the Mac App Store. And as somebody uses TweetDeck as my primary Twitter client, it's driving me absolutely batty because on every Mac computer, I'm all good to go with the features, and then whenever I get back on my Mac, it feels like I'm in prehistory. It's just it's making me absolutely crazy. I think Apple is to blame, but I have no idea.
We should make this a weekly post series. Things that make you go
yeah.
Just collect everybody's frustrations. Ged, what is driving you nuts right now?
It's
gotta
be
something. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, not necessarily with the Retina. Is there a gripe you'd like to share while you have the soapbox? Because both Julio and I have done so.
I'm kind of gripey that Photoshop still isn't compatible with the Retina. I mean, they never did give like a time frame for when Adobe was going to have it out. But
end of the year. It said end of the year.
Was it the end of the year? That's a long time. That's a long
before the end of the year.
That is a long time.
And it's actually interesting because Craig has been doing research this past week to get Xscope updated for Retina, and he has uncovered a slew of bugs with how the code is handled in the Retina stuff and how the screen is drawn and how the OS reports like the where the pixels are and where the cursors are in relation to pixels and how those things affect how they're going to affect Xscope and how they're going to affect Photoshop. It's pretty much, as it stands right now, it's pretty much impossible to get an accurate measurement of the screen on a Retina display. Now, there's a whole bunch of really technical reasons that I don't fully understand, but I trust him, and he tells me these things, so I agree with him. So that bugs me, yes.
It seems like the sort of thing that we might want to hear more about if Craig were to share such in a blog post or an interview. Encourage him to do that.
Encourage him to write a blog post about it because it's really important stuff, and it's going to affect a lot of apps, and Photoshop is one of them. And Photoshop's going to have to either – Apple's going to have to correct the bugs before Photoshop will work with the Retina stuff, or Adobe's going to have to figure out a way to work around them, which I highly doubt. I think Apple will probably bend over backwards to correct the defects. So it actually doesn't really surprise me that it will take until the end of the year that we see Photoshop for Retina.
It's not, unfortunately, it's not simple. It is a tricky thing to deal with because it's not as simple as simply saying, okay, the screen's twice the resolution, everybody pack up and go home.
Do you know how many Flash assets they have to re-render?
And they have to do it all on one Dell.
Can I pile on for a second, Mike?
But sure.
Because the one thing that's driving me nuts, and it's the same thing on the iPad, is the lack of a standard for Retina on the web. You have some people using JavaScript, some people using Media Query. You have WebKit-ImageSet, which kind of backgrounds everything, and there's just no clear, consistent path to offering a same solution for all your web visitors all the time.
That's a worthwhile gripe.
That's the problem.
That's much more of a server side gripe than a client side gripe.
But we have to look at these ugly. Like you're on this beautiful iPad, this beautiful Mac, and the minute you go to the web, suddenly you see JPEG artifacts and junky pixels.
That's true. And I mean, it's most noticeable when you have a primarily text based application like for example, our CMS at the UAW, it's almost all text except for a few widgets that are bitmapped. And then you look at those widgets and you go, zombie graphics. All right.
Truly.
Like I said, Zeroth World problem. We've been given the best screen ever on a portable computer, and we are complaining that stuff that isn't specifically optimized for it doesn't look good, which comes as a surprise to absolutely no one because it hasn't been optimized for it. It's a teething phase, absolutely. It is going to get better, but in the meantime, yes, it is annoying. Smaller pixels on Amazon yesterday. Let's get that. Let's get right on that. So I'm thrilled to have had you all here this evening. I think we've had the evening rant session. We're looking forward to Mountain Lion later this week. We're looking forward to the earnings call. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of you and hearing all of you back here next week on the show. I want to thank, first of all, our last-minute arrival from the Great Strait. Seriously, what is going on with my voice tonight? Bizarre. I couldn't get his intro right. I can't get his outro right. From the Icon Factory, Mr. Gedeon Mikiu.
Good. Thanks for having me, as always.
Thanks for being with us, Ged. From iMore.com, where you can find it at iMore.com, a lot of wonderful coverage and some great forward-thinking posts over there, so do check it out. Mr. Rene Ritchie.
Thank you very much for having me. Always a pleasure, guys.
Good to have you. From the St. Paul I can't get anybody. The Pioneer Press, the St. Paul, Minnesota Pioneer Press, tech columnist and all-around journalist for the Pioneer Press, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming. Very glad to have you. And so sorry, everybody, that I'm screwing up your outros, which
and
means
before
I have
we
to
get... move on, before
yeah.
we move on, I would just like to say that, Julio, you have a standing invitation any Sunday night that you're itching to rock out with your geek out, you are more than welcome to show up on the TalkCast, and whatever we're talking about, we would love to have you come on and contribute.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And we've got that on tape now, Kelly, so we're going to have to live up to it. But that applies to all of you and anyone listening as well. The TalkCast is here for you every Sunday night, either with me or with Kelly or with Steve, but we are thrilled to have such a distinguished panel tonight. It's not going to be as good next week, Kelly. We should just cancel next week's show now, right?
We really should, because, yeah, it's not like Renee and Julio are going to show up. Jim Dalrymple will show up occasionally as a surprise. He'll just show up and be like, how's it going, eh? And, you know, that's lovely, but, you know, you can't count on him. Yeah, you can't count on him being here every week, so, yeah.
It's true. But who you can count on being here almost every week is the mistress of the House of Crackpot Theories, my delightful and talented and lovely co-host of the TalkCast, Ms. Kelly Grimont.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. And I've been pleased to just listen to you guys. A lot of times I will try to jump in to get my own two bits in on whatever we're talking about, but I'm just really interested to see what you guys have to say. So tonight it was very easy for me to be quiet. And I mean that in, like, the nicest possible way. I know that sounds weird, but it's totally the truth.
It doesn't sound weird at all. And I am I'm thrilled to be here with you as well. My name is Michael Rose. I've been your host for this evening. We will be back next week. Do tune in for 2OTV Live on Wednesday, hosted by Steve Sandy. Join us for the live blog of the earnings call on Tuesday. And stay tuned for all our Mountain Lion coverage, which you can find at 2OTV.com/tag/Mountain Lion. We will be covering the heck out of this new OS release as soon as it drops, including a full review from our mystery correspondent. So on behalf of all our participants tonight, thank you all for joining us. This has been the unofficial Apple Weblog TalkCast for July 22nd, 2012. Good night.